720 WGN. It is Dane here with you high atop Chicago here in the Skyline studio. An exciting show on tap for you until 10 tonight. We're going to cover some current events. We're going to cover a little bit of food coming up, and we're going to talk a little bit of car stuff. And also on Labor Day, and happy Labor Day to everyone. Hope that that your weekend was great. I think it was a pretty good weekend weather wise. Nah, you know, sometimes Memorial Day and Labor Day, they don't give us the best weather, but this one was pretty good. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, what you guys were cooking. 312-981-7200. It is one of the festive celebratory holidays where people do celebrate with food, and comes a little bit of backyard and some barbecue stuff. So 312-981-7200 if you want to share what it is that you are making. Plus, we're going to talk some first jobs. And so Brendan Rook is in the booth. He is our great producer, the incomparable Brendan Rook. So just be ready, Brendan. And throughout the course of time, we're going to talk some of those first jobs. It doesn't have to be the exact first job, but maybe some of those early jobs as people got used to being out in the workplace. And oftentimes, as a young person, you're doing things that aren't necessarily maybe the things that will define you on a career standpoint, but are certainly interesting and fun to talk about. And maybe the things no one else wanted to do. A guy has one of the best jobs out there. He is a world traveling rock on tour. He is I think a renaissance man is the way that I typically describe him. He is the dining and drinking editor for New City Magazine, and our good friend, the one and only Dave Hammond. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, Dave, we've got to ask you to kind of set the scene here. What was your first job? It is Labor Day.
Oh,
so
man. It's a job that no one would allow a child to do in this day and age. I think I was 13, and the Dram greenhouses were once this huge, like three large greenhouses in Elmhurst, where now the there's like a pool and a park. There are commons. It's on York Road right near Villette. So they hired two dozen junior high school students. I mean, this is the summer before I went into high school. So I was, 12, something, 13, something like that. They gave us a hammer. They showed us where to climb up these pipes and work for a scavenging company. So we're saving the glass that we're knocking out of the, we'd like carefully bang on the rafters of the struts that were holding up the glass, walk along plumbing pipes that would water the plants at the greenhouse, collecting the glass as we went down, you know, just walking along these pipes. My first day there, this guy, John Geisler, I still remember his name, he fell off one of these pipes a pile of glass. He starts yelling, artery, artery, and there's blood going everywhere. They had to take him to the hospital. I doubt he hit an artery, but he cut himself up. I mean, it was easy to get, you know, hurt in that kind of situation. I remember we made $1 an hour. That was like,
wow.
That was righteous money in that day and age for like a 12-year-old kid to make in that period. But still, it was like I actually told my dad about it. I thought I was reminding my dad of this like 3-4 years ago, and he said, where were your parents when this was happening? Oh, you should have been working there. That was my first job, and it was a wild one. It was great, though. I was working with all my buddies from junior high school. We're working in the sun, got a great tan. We got to break glass and burn stuff. It was all right.
Dave, I was actually expecting something like paperboy. You know, I mean, one of those kind of mundane things. I didn't think we'd go all the way back to an industrial revolution, like 8-year-old chained to a punch press kind of experience.
And after that, child labor laws were enacted, and never again shall we see jobs like that for kids. Yeah, it was wild.
My gosh, I'm sure there were kids cut in the air from the same cloth as a Dave Hammond, but 100 years earlier that were there at the Palmer House, probably building it at age 9 and 10 and doing all sorts of dangerous things and probably signing a waiver form of some sort or whatever was the equivalent of the time. But let's talk about it, because all the things that you do on the travel side and, of course, the dining and drinking side, also, you know, a historian, you're always a fan of history and some of the things that are happening. When it comes to history for hospitalities, hotels, architecture, which Chicago is known for, it is just one of those things, and there's been so many kind of just, you know, negative, heartbreaking hits that have come through this pandemic. But here's another one with the Palmer House.
Yeah, I mean, the hotel industry as a whole, as you know, has been taking major hits. I mean, they're like 80% down and places have closed. In fact, I believe the Palmer House has been closed for some months, and then they got hit with this this settlement. What do you call it?
A lawsuit.
A foreclosure notice, right? For like $300 million or something like that because they're back on their mortgage. It's tragic. I mean, what are they going to do with that building, too? I mean, it's such a marvelous Beaux-Arts structure, you know, that people say they don't build them like that anymore. They sure as hell don't. I mean, there's no... I mean, the feel of that place is so marvelous. You really are brought back to old-time Chicago. They have a historian there, a guy named Price. I think it's Tom Price, Ken Price. And I talked to him a couple of years ago about the brownie, which was invented on the food subject, was invented at the Palmer House.
Now, Dave, of course, was the brownie just, and let's, you know, be as honest as we can and think about, was it just a like a failed cake that was like, hey, we got something?
No, it was created under the direction of Bertha Palmer for the Women's Pavilion at the 1893 Columbian Exposition. She wanted something special to put in the ladies' lunch box there, and she wanted something more than just a piece of cake or a clump of fruit. So she told her chef to make something that was kind of like a cookie, but denser than a cookie, and it had to be chocolate because she really loved chocolate. So this guy named Seal, S-E-H-L, chef, came up with this brownie. And it's hard to imagine a time when the brownie didn't exist. You know, it's kind of like... I mean, it's not even capitalized now. You know, it's like it seems like it was eternal, like toast,
or like cookie. That. You know, just a,
yeah,
it's just
like
something's
cookie.
Always
who invented
been
the cookie. Who knows? But the brownie can actually be traced, at least the first time it was ever put on a menu and served. We've talked before about Chicago original foods, and Monica Eng of the WBEZ and I are writing this book. We already filed our chapter, so this is going into print with U of I Press.
Nice.
How do you date when a dish began? When the first recipe for it appeared? When it first appeared on a menu? I mean, it's kind of slippery and tricky, and a lot of times, although not in the case of the brownie, there are people who are claiming that they're the ones who originated it, and it's, you know, like their word against anyone else. But there are a number of dishes that were created actually within like a block or two of the Palmer House, like shrimp de jong was invented at de jong's restaurant. I mean, that's pretty much a lock, you know, the shrimp with the garlic and the butter, super simple dish. I gotta believe somebody tried that before it was ever served at de jong's, but it was on their menu first, so they get it. They get, you know, bragging rights. Chicken Vesuvio started at Vesuvio's restaurant, which was like right across the street from the Palmer House at Vesuvio's restaurant. I mean, it's like, okay, well, you know, you got to give it to those guys. Their name is on the dish. It's hard to say that they weren't the ones who invented it.
So you know that, you know, the proximity of the Palmer House, people that stayed there, people that worked there, probably enjoyed these iconic dishes. I don't know that's gonna save the space. It's 1,600 rooms. It's just an enormous place. It's an entire city block, and you look at the architecture, you couldn't make it. You could not recreate that, and just all of the kind of the grandeur and the opulence. And so when we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Dave Hammond. We're going to talk a little bit about things like this that are really truly priceless, you know, like the Palmer House. Should it be something? I know there's going to be value there. Someone's going to pick it up and do something with it, right? You know, just like the post office
must
or something.
Must be a hotel they're going to do with it.
Yeah. I'm sure something will happen, but is it something where like either the government or the people should step in to protect some of these things that could not be recreated and are so iconic and I think identified with the city? So keep it here. A quick break. We'll be back with Dave Hammond. It's Dane on 720 WGN. Some people stay 720 away. WGN, it is Dane here with you, high atop Chicago Skyline Studio. We're talking with the editor of the dining and drinking editor of New City Magazine, Dave Hammond. He's got a new book coming out. It's going to talk about some of the indigenous delicacies of Chicago when it comes to indigenous, kind of just amazing things people associate and see when they visit the city. The Palmer House is definitely one of them, and it's the kind of thing, before we went to the break, we talked about it. Is there certain things that are just too valuable, right? That there has to be some, you know, and maybe it's the, you know, I can't imagine that it's not on the landmark committee. So I don't know that they could just bulldoze it or turn it into, you know, a bowling alley or something like that. but when there are, you know, kind of financial challenges, maybe there's situations that shouldn't be left up to market forces.
And some of these big buildings, though, I live in Oak Park, and we had a Marshall Fields there for years. I mean, when we first moved into Oak Park in the 80s, there was a functioning Marshall Fields, a department store in downtown Oak Park. And now it's like, it's kind of a white elephant. I mean, there are offices in there, but they're not using a lot of the space just because buildings that large are kind of hard to, excuse the term, unload. You know, who's going to buy that space? What can anyone do with a space that large? Because it's kind of a throwback to an earlier era, as is the Palmer House. I mean, all those rooms downtown, it's going to be a tough sell. And I don't know if someone stepped in to preserve it, some governmental agency or whatever, would it just be a museum? I mean, it seems like it's got to be generating income of some. I don't know how that would happen.
Yeah, I don't know either. And here's the thing, too, is it isn't necessarily, falling on hard times because, Chicago on the tourism side, the whole world is basically kind of shut down. Mm-hmm. And so you've got that. But then you also have an industry that has been, as hard hit as any. And so it isn't the dysfunction of one hotelier or one company and someone else who's got a better vision and maybe a better bottom line can come in and do things. The entire hotel industry is down. So you almost need, one of these billionaire guys who just says, like, hey, what I want to take, I appreciate it, right? And then maybe they see it and then can kind of turn it around or preserve it just for, I guess, general principle.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, like somebody came in with an extra $500 million and could pay off the debt. And,
well, when they were having the campaigns and things, and so Michael Bloomberg, that was an opportunity where people were aware that, I don't know if it was $100 million a day or a week or some kind of crazy amount that the guy makes where you're just like, well, what would it hurt, in order to see the value in something like that? You've got a special connection to it, right? I think you said in some of the, where the Palmer House is a thing that has been in your kind of sphere of consciousness personally.
Well, I used to get my hair cut at the Oak Park Arms by a guy named Emo Messina. He was possibly the oldest practicing barber in the world. That's not an exaggeration. He was like, he started when he was 12 in Sicily. His dad was a barber, his uncle was a barber, all his brothers were barbers. And then after the war, and he had some great stories about Sicily during the war, and he would tell, when I'd go in there, I'd always get a story or two. After the war, he came to the United States and went to work at the Palmer House at what was then billed as the world's largest barber shop. Now, this is before the days when there were salons or, places where you have like four or five chairs. You go and you get a haircut. And it was connected to a hotel, as the first restaurants in Chicago were, too. I mean, there weren't like standalone restaurants up until like the end of the 19th century. Restaurants would be in hotels like the Lake House, that was where the Tribune building is right now. That was a hotel, the Lake House, and had a restaurant underneath serving real simple stuff. I mean, nothing fancy. But it was, and hotels were also where you'd go to get a haircut. And Emo would say that every morning there'd be guys who would be working downtown who would stop in the barber shop at the Palmer House, the world's largest barber shop, where they had silver dollars embedded in the floor, would get a haircut there or a trim. I mean, I don't know how they got a haircut every day, but they trim the mustache, give them a shave, because of course this is I'm not even sure when electric razors were invented, how many times people shaved at home, but fancy men would go and get a shave and a haircut at the Palmer House barber shop, and Emo cut the hair of Jack Benny, the old TV performer who lived in Waukegan, so he was in the Midwest quite a lot. He had an autographed photo of Jack Benny above his cash register, which I was thinking about today, and I think that was kind of a joke that I didn't get until just today. It's like Jack Benny was always really tight with a dollar. That was like one of the continuing laughs in his routine on the Jack Benny Show, which aired in the 50s. And he would, so putting him over the cash register was kind of funny, but I didn't get it until today. Liberace used to go get his haircut at the Palmer House barbershop with Emo, and Emo said that when Liberace was in town, he'd come like once a year and perform at the Chicago Theater or something like that, they would put him in a room and they would have to build out a closet, a special closet just for Liberace.
What? So he was doing like Cher style costume changes in between, like, you know, I mean, yeah, he was a showman, you know that.
He was quite a dresser. I mean, even in the day, I mean, he was, you know, showing up on stage in these lavish, you know, white mink, white, you know, whatever they are, white fur coats and, yeah, putting on quite a visual show. I mean, one of the first really openly gay performers I think there maybe ever was in the United States, certainly. But yeah, so he had a closet built for him so he could house all his furs and all his really cool stuff when he'd come to town. And Emo, the same guy who cut my hair, cut Liberace's hair, which I am, yes, quite proud of.
Well, you've been known to play a rhinestone encrusted piano. I know that's...
Yeah, I've
seen those pictures on social media. One of the things, you talk about the Palmer House and the history, when it comes to the food events, Chicago Gourmet, certainly not, you know, the length of time, but beloved, and people were so excited about it, and it's one of those things that has been pushed back, you know, like so many different festivals. You didn't know that it was going to even happen in any kind of incarnation, and so now they're going to have it, right? They're going to have it. It's going to be a combination of some social distance sort of satellite events, not that big thing in the middle of Millennium Park, but they're going to do it. And then also too, some of the things that we've participated in over the course of these past months, some kind of virtual experiences with some of those chefs.
Yeah, they're going to do virtual cooking demos with chefs. The Hamburger Hop, which you've been judge at, I believe.
Sure. Right, Dane? I've been there. I've been there, and I've done that. I know that I think even one year you were at it, and then you came on the air with us like after it was over.
Yeah,
we did sort of a live recap.
That's right. Yeah, I've been going to Chicago Gourmet since the first year it opened, and boy, has it evolved. I mean, when it first started, I wondered if it was going to make it to the second year because they had, you know, Southern Wine and Spirits, a huge liquor distributor in the Midwest. They provided all the alcohol, so there was a lot of alcohol, but there wasn't that much food that first year.
No, I was joking about it because I mean, I was there first year, and I joke about it. And we're going to have Chef Kevin Hickey on a little bit later in the program, and so I remember it from what it's Millennium Park. So, you know, it's that big space, and the listeners, of course, can envision it. And it was like Rick Bayless signing books at a card table in the middle, and the entire perimeter was surrounded by wine booths, and that was it. There really wasn't a lot of food that
Very little. Food, very little food. And I saw a fight break out on Michigan Avenue. I mean, it was basically an ocean of, well, what's the polite term for it? Overserved individuals who probably would have preferred to have a bite to eat. And then after that first year, things got smarter really fast, and it's become such a wonderful event. I mean, part of the cool one cool aspect of it is you can meet people like Rick Bayless or Kevin Hickey or others. You know, civilians, regular folks, just lining up to get a bite to eat at one of the vendor stations because they're there to kind of, you know, serve food, but also to talk to people. And so you can get a chance to meet the local food gods and also have a bite to eat and perhaps a drink.
And here's something that's a little bit different about it, too, is that, and I've covered all of these events, attended them, broadcast live from them, and so many of them bring in, you know, food stars from, you know, the world of television or whatever kind of walks of notoriety. And Chicago Gourmet stands on its own. It's one of the best in the world, one of the best in the country. And it really is, for the most part, the vast majority Chicago-based. And I think it's just a testament not only to, you know, the house supported the restaurants are here or have been, the talent level that is here, and then, you know, just the participatory nature of our local great chefs.
Yeah, and it's to have that event canceled or relocated, let's say, online. And as I was going to say, the Hamburger Hop is now taking place at a number of local restaurants. It used to be, as you know, Dan, an event where hamburgers would be prepared and served at the event, and judges such as yourself would determine which one was the best. Now Hamburger Hop is being held kind of at satellite restaurants where people are serving burgers and people can vote for it. It sounds like it'll really be fun. Not quite the same, though. Not quite the same as having everyone together in one place trying the same food. So that event has been, relocated. The Beard Awards were canceled, which is really which also took place in Chicago for like the last 3-4 years, and is scheduled to go on for another year or two. In fact, the Beard, I mean, I'm sure you heard this, the Beard Foundation actually isn't even giving out awards this year for a number of reasons, not the least of which is concerns about systemic racism. I mean, it's really, there's such a confluence of national, I mean, what do you call it, emergencies going on right now that it's kind of mind-boggling, and you just hope somebody's in charge.
Oh, my gosh. You know, they have those, you know, kind of memes or jokes, you know, that says that, you know, coming up in, you know, October, November, we're going to have, you know, the meteor storm or whatever is going to happen, dinosaurs.
Asteroid.
Right, an alien abduction, takeover, or whatever. So
best.
Right, and that would maybe be an improvement from some of the stuff that we've all had to deal with and go through. It has been a challenging time, and to see some things happen out of it. So this later on this week, too, we've got other shows. I'll be having Jernard Wells. I'll be moderating one of those kind of virtual things that we're doing and supporting, of course, as always, Chicago Gourmet. So in the last minute or so that we've got with you, Dave, give the information about how people can, you know, follow you online. I know you're there, of course, in New City. And then when is the book coming out?
The book should be out in, you know, dating at this point in history is so hard to do. It's supposed to come out in like 2021, but, you know, who knows what'll actually happen. I mean, everything's slowed down. It's hard to get people to interview because they're not in their restaurants anymore. But yeah, the book will be about Chicago original foods. The obvious ones like deep dish pizza and Chicago hot dog. And Italian beef, but also lots of ones that people may not have heard of, like the mother-in-law or the Freddy. What are those delicious dishes? Well, you have to buy the book and find out.
You got to buy the book to know what it is that's been going all around you forever. And so I want to thank and, of course, encourage people to check you out online. We'll have links up at WGNradio.com as we kind of surf all of the challenging situations. I always appreciate when Dave Hammond can jump on the line. Thanks, Dave.
Great fun, Dan. Thanks.
Take it easy. All right, we're going to take a break. Actually, it's going to be news time in a second, so keep it here. It's staying on 720 WGN.